This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittlein. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittlein.
Good evening, my listeners, and oh, are you in for a treat tonight? I met David Young at the Mum Fair, which is one of the expos that I do in Allentown, Pennsylvania every year. And it was immediately obvious to me that this fellow was 120% the kind of person that you not only want to know, but you want to follow. You want to see what he does. So we had David on a year or so ago about his own music, but something spectacular has occurred for him. And he's written a book called Channeling Harrison. Now, like vast numbers of my generation, I was an Emma Beatles fan. My favorites were John Lennon for his intellect and his wit and his belief in people, especially in his later life, and George Harrison. So I was amazed to learn of David's connection with George. The simple story is, in 2010, beyond any apparent reason, George Harrison began appearing in David's life. And at first, these unusual experiences occurred about every 2 months, even though David knew little of channeling experiences. You know, he doesn't work on my end of the block. He was far from being a Beatles fan, and frankly, he was kind of afraid of ghosts. But over 100 real-life miracles have occurred, many of these included in his book, Channeling Harrison, Book 1. It was released in March by the publisher of Conversations with God, and Channeling Harrison offers you a way to think about life after death. And I am just tickled plaid to have David on the show to talk about it. David, welcome back.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
So for people who don't know your background, give us what I call the elevator pitch. How you got into music, why this seemed to, if you will, clear the channels, no pun intended, for George to come through. What's your background?
Well, I started playing the recorder, which is like a Renaissance flute, in third grade in New York City in the public school system. And I was the worst in my class, but by a miracle, my class was given a second year of the recorder. And during that second year, I started catching on to it. And, you know, the following year, I got so good at it, I studied from a guy in the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. And, you know, my life took off in this whole classical music thing. And that was until I heard Jethro Tull in high school. And once I heard Jethro Tull, that was the end of my classical career. And I started playing rock music. I started to play electric guitar and singing. And I ended up joining a band that turned out to be an AC/DC tribute band in the early 80s that played all over the East Coast. And dressed up like Angus Young for a couple of years and did like a Beatlemania show of AC/DC. Then when I was 22, I got into spirituality. I started to meditate. I studied a teaching called Ekankar, and I didn't have a beer, a glass of wine, or any kind of funny stuff from the time I was 22 until this experience started in 2010. And then, you know, now I'll have a beer or a glass of wine now that's three and a half years after this thing started. But to say that I lived on the straight and narrow, I couldn't have lived on the more straight and narrow. I meditated every day for, you know, a half hour to an hour every day. And so when this experience started, I really didn't understand why it was starting, because I was too young to be a Beatles fan. I'm 53. And even though there's a lot of people who love the Beatles, I was into more hard rock when I was younger. So this was really, it wasn't my thing. And so these things with George started happening. And in the beginning, it was just every couple of months something would happen. And I'd be thinking, God, this is bizarre. You know, I was one of those people that if a show came on TV that had anything to do with channeling, I would laugh and then change the channel. Because I just didn't believe in it. I didn't have any experiences in it. And, you know, I thought that because you couldn't really prove it physically, that anybody could make up any experiences that they want and nobody could argue with you, you know, because there was no way to prove or disprove it. So what George did with my experience was he proved it to me through these never-ending synchronicities that have just been consistent over the last 3.5 years, and that's what my book is all about. My book is, this is called Channeling Harrison Book 1, and I'm 80% done with Book 2. The first book was finished in October, and the unique thing about it was that, you know, all throughout this whole experience, my publisher, who is, you know, a well-known publisher, he had published many, many famous books on channeling and spirituality and all that other good stuff. And, you know, he, when we got to the end of the book, when we were editing it, he said, you know, anybody who's going to buy this book is going to want to know why George chose you and what it's all about. And I said, well, I would love to know what this whole thing is all about, because I haven't got a clue what it's all about. And this was the truth. And, you know, he said, well, we got to write something. So, you know, we were having this big heated discussion, and he said, well, we just have to write something. So he was at the computer, he was typing into the manuscript, and he said, what George wants is, and before he could finish the sentence, on a beautiful summer day in August, without a cloud in the sky, without a breeze, or it was just a gorgeous, perfect day, George turned off the power in his house because George didn't want him to be writing in the book what my publisher, you know, just being a good publisher, thinking that anybody's going to buy the book, wants to know what this is all about, you know. And he turned off the power in my publisher's house, and for the first time, I got to see somebody else be in the effect of all this fun stuff. And so it was fun for me. It took me about 10 minutes to stop laughing because, you know, the look on my publisher's face, I mean, it was really obvious what was happening. You know, it was, you know, George just didn't want him to write in my book or our book, because, you know, George calls this our book because it's all the experiences that he has set up in my life magically, that I just document. And there's so many of them that happen on a daily basis that it's a mind-blowing thing. This is what it really took for me, a non-believer, an absolute skeptic in channeling, to actually believe that this stuff was possible, because, you know, with all the years I'd been meditating and all the spiritual experiences that I'd had, you know, because it was 27 years of meditating when this thing started, I'd never had an experience with a spirit, or I hate using the word ghost just because there's such a negative connotation with it, but I'd never had an experience with somebody who was not alive anymore. And so because I hadn't had that experience, I didn't think it was possible. My mom, every once in a while, would talk about the fact that she felt that my grandmother, who had died about 10 years earlier, that she felt my grandmother's presence all the time. But because I hadn't had any personal experiences with it, I just dismissed it and I just let it go in one ear and out the other ear. And, you know, so it was a unique journey for me to go from a non-believer to somebody who actually lives with this on a daily basis.
I know what it's like to not want to use the word ghost because it's so fraught with misconstrued meanings. I tend to call them discarnates because they're not in form. What I'm curious about is how George reached you the first time, what he did to break through your "this doesn't happen to me" thing.
Well, I'll tell you, but I want to tell the people who are listening that, like, a couple of days after this experience happened, my logical mind went to work, like all of our logical minds go to work, to disprove, dismiss, and just get this thing out of my head, because this is not really happening, you know, because that's what our logical mind, we've been trained to do this our whole life. So what happened was that it was, I ended a 9-year relationship 9 days before our anniversary. It was a terrible time. I had adopted my ex's kids. They lived in my house. It was, you know, it was just an absolute horrible time. And so because I had been traveling 40 weekends a year, for 20 years, all over the United States and different parts of the world, but mostly in the United States, I had been flying, you know, every weekend just about. And now, because of the economy in 2010 and everything that was happening, I couldn't afford to fly. So I had to move from Minneapolis, where I lived for 9 years, back to the East Coast, because at least on the East Coast, I could drive to all the shows, you know. And so as I was driving across the country, I was completely falling apart because, you know, I loved my ex's kids. I loved her. You know, it was just a terrible, terrible time. And so I had been looking for something to listen to that would make me feel better. And I had this pile of CDs right next to me that was on the passenger seat. And there were 50 random CDs approximately that weren't in cases. And I said, God, pick me a good one that's going to help me feel better. And I randomly picked one out like a fortune cookie. And the CD that I had picked out was a CD I really had not listened to a lot. It was a gift that I had been given the previous year for Christmas, and it was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And so I thought, well, that's pretty appropriate, you know, Lonely Hearts Club Band. You know, I'm in a car by myself. I've got 3 weeks of driving because I have a couple of gigs in Chicago before I get to the East Coast. And so I put this on, and about on the eighth song, it was George's song, Within You, Without You, and it starts with a sitar. It's a very spiritual song. It's probably like, it was a definitely the most spiritual song of its time when it came out. I think that was in 1967 or 1968. And there was something about that song that just brought me a sense of peace. It just made me feel a little bit better. So I hit repeat, and then I hit repeat again, and I found myself listening to that song between 2 and 3 hours a day, every day, for 3 weeks as I drove to the East Coast. And this was, you know, this was not normal. I get to the East Coast and I go to visit a friend of mine who I haven't seen since high school, because I used to give him guitar lessons when I was in high school, and he was in junior high school. He was one of my younger brother's friends. And I get to his house. He takes me to his best friends who wants to meet me because, you know, they've heard I've got a little bit famous and they would just like to, you know, meet with me, you know. So we get to his best friend's house, and sitting on his best friend's television set was a DVD of the concert for Bangladesh. And the only thing that I knew about George Harrison when this whole thing started was that I knew he was friends with Eric Clapton. Of course, he was one of the Beatles, and he had something to do with the concert for Bangladesh. And so I asked him if we could watch a little bit of this thing because, you know, I'm listening to this one song of his, you know, every day for 2 or 3 hours a day. He's got my attention. Gee, maybe I should watch this thing and see what this guy's really all about. And so we put the thing on, and we watched the whole thing. And then after that, the very next day, I was, for the first time, I was traveling, I was carpooling with a guy who lived outside of Princeton, New Jersey, and I was going to carpool with him down to Baltimore. In the 20 years I've been doing this, I had never done anything like this. It was just a random thing that ended up happening, but it was a perfect setup. I get to this guy's van, I put my flutes, my CDs, my clothing in the back of his van. I sit down in the front seat of his van, and on the dashboard of his van is a cassette tape of the concert for Bangladesh. This is the very next day, right after seeing my friend from high school that I hadn't seen in 30 years, you know. And I didn't think this was funny. I just thought it was weird. And I didn't laugh. I just I looked at that thing for 3 hours as we drove down to Baltimore, and I said, what in the world is this thing doing here? He said, I went to the concert for Bangladesh in 1971. I bought 2 tickets for $3.50 each, and my 2 ticket stubs and this tape have been in a box in my attic for the last 30-something years, and I took out the tape this morning to listen to on the drive down to Baltimore. Now, can you get any more random than that?
No.
So no, the weird thing, nothing happened for 3 months. And every once in a while, I would think about, what was that all about? Two of these bizarre things happened in 24 hours, and then nothing happened. I ended up moving down to a suburb of Philadelphia that was called Newtown. And one of my friends introduced me to a woman who was a yoga teacher. I used to do yoga quite a bit at that point. And so on my third date with her, she asked me what the highlight of my career was. And at that point, well, actually, in my whole career, the highlight of my career was when I played for Paul McCartney and he started a standing ovation for me, you know. So that's what I said. I said it was when Paul McCartney started a standing ovation for me in 1999. And she said, well, did you know that George Harrison used to babysit me? And I'm like, what? She says, yeah. My mom and George went to the same yoga ashram in Tucson, Arizona. Remember the Beatles had that song, JoJo left his home in Tucson, Arizona, right? From the song Get Back, that's because that's where the Beatles used to vacation. And So George was going to a yoga ashram studying meditation there, and he met her mom, and when her mom and her biological dad split up, George and her mom started to date, and a couple of months later, they had fallen in love, and George moved her and her mom to England, and she grew up in George's castle. And can you imagine what it would be like to hear something like that? I mean, I already liked her. She didn't have to tell me that to get me to like her. I was already liking her. And that's when things really started to get even more interesting. I mean, you have to understand, I didn't believe in this stuff. I had never had a positive experience with a spirit. I mean, I was in some hotels over the years and when I was younger where I had negative experiences with the spirit, but I had never had any kind of ongoing experience with somebody who wasn't alive anymore. And he actually appeared in my bedroom. He played guitar for me in my bedroom. And I mean, I was completely awake. I heard what he was playing. I took the music he gave me, and that completely went into a song that I had been working on the lyrics that I couldn't come up with the music for. And basically, once that started, it's kept on ever since then. And I met this woman. The first date I had with her was on 10-10-10, October 10th, 2010. She thought it was, she had found out that it was a magical day astrologically because of all the cool stuff that was supposedly happening. What she read on the internet was that a heavenly force was reemerging on Earth for the first time in thousands of years, you know. I had no idea how prophetic that would be to what I've been experiencing over the last 3.5 years since then, you know. And so
how did George introduce himself to you when he just appeared in your room? Did he just sit there and start playing? Did he look at you? Was there any kind of conversation? What happened?
Well, fortunately for me, I could just see like the outline of like a shadow, you know, but the music that was coming out of him was clear. I mean, it was clear as your voice is on this interview. You know, I heard it clearly, and he played me this piece of music twice, you know, and I'm sitting there in my bed thinking, I'm really glad I can't see him because it would freak me right out and scare the hell out of me, because you got to remember, I was afraid of ghosts in this thing, you know?
I'm sure
and,
you
knew. So I picked up my guitar. I played it, you know, I figured out what he was playing, and it went perfect with those songs. And then the very next day, you know, you have to remember that happened in the middle of the night. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, you know? He was waking me up at between 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the morning for about 2 weeks, but I really wasn't sure what was going on. But when this thing happened, I really got the message. The next day, I was in the recording studio recording this song. I had the headphones on. I was playing the electric guitar. And in my mind, in the middle of the song, I said to myself, you know, like with my thought, this sounds exactly like something George Harrison would have played. And at that exact moment, this light appeared in the room that was, it was about 3 feet wide. It was all different colors of sparkling blue with a little star in the middle of it. And it was like Close Encounters of the George kind. That's the best way I could describe it. And it hovered over me, right to the right of me, for 6 seconds. Now, I have to tell you, I had seen little flashes of light because I'd been meditating for 27 years when this thing started. But I'd never seen anything that was that large and hovered in front of me for 6 seconds. You know, sometimes you see those little sparkles or something, and that lasts for, let's say, you know, a millisecond. This was the first time I'd ever seen anything that just glowed there right in front of me. And because of the timing of the thought, when I said, wow, this sounds exactly like something George would have played, and I was playing the music that he had given me the night before, there was no doubt in my mind that this was him. I mean, I'd never had an experience like this in my entire life. And
I'm going to corroborate for you because that sort of thing, not with George, but that sort of thing did happen to me. Someone else witnessed it in the 1970s in Cambridge, Massachusetts. My understanding is you were seeing George's oversoul, the totality of who George was. So
that makes
I'm here to
sense.
Tell you what you saw is exactly correct, and you did figure it out right.
Well, the unique thing that has happened since, so, you know, these experiences went on for 3 years, then he got me a publishing deal with the guy who published Conversations with God. I mean, you know, I had
when
lots of...
When you say he did, how did he do it?
Well, first of all, there were a lot of different experiences that I had where he would actually come into my third eye in my meditation. And I didn't know that this was possible, but he did. And there were different things that happened in the dream state where he would come, he would give me an experience in the dream state. And then the next day or 2-3 days later, what he had just told me would manifest in my life. And so at this point, it was 3 years into the experience. I mean, it was a part-time job writing down all of these experiences, because if every other day I was having an experience, and if it took me an hour or two to type it all out like it was a chapter in a book, you know, that was taking a lot of my time. And things really started to pick up in the summer of 2013. And so I had this dream with him where I said, George, you know, I'm writing all this stuff down. I'm doing everything you want me to do, but I don't know anybody in the book publishing industry. And if you want this to be made into a film or something, you know, I'm going to need your help because I don't know anybody, you know, and there's obviously a reason why you're continually giving me these experiences. And so if you want this to come out in a book or in some kind of story so the world can hear about it, you know, I need your help. And he said, I've been helping you, I am helping you, and I'm going to continue helping you. And it was powerful. Within 48 hours, he had gotten me a publishing deal with this guy who had published Conversations with God. All the details of it are in the book. And I can't tell the whole story right now, or else, you know, we won't have time to talk about anything else. But it was right on. But the unique thing that I definitely want to share is that, you know, we have different impressions of people, you know, like first impressions, how lasting they are. And when we think of somebody being a musician, you know, it's hard for us to think of them in any other light, you know. And the unique thing with George is that he had dedicated his whole life to not only understanding himself spiritually, but sharing that understanding with every possible way that the media had opened up itself because he was so famous in the Beatles. You know, he told me that there were certain points that he was more interested in spirituality than he was in being in the Beatles. And you can imagine after traveling all those years, you know, that would get boring and, you know, running away from people. I mean, that would get tiring and everything. And so because he had gotten so into spirituality, it was the driving force in his life. And so spirit, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, used him in every possible way. And because of that, the world advanced. Because before that time, if you look back before the Beatles started, there was no such thing as yoga studios. There was no such thing in the West as this concept called self-realization. You know, nobody was talking about self-realization. It wasn't even it wasn't even an issue or a topic of conversation. And because he used his notoriety or his celebrity to bring attention to spirituality and the fact that we can have spiritual experiences, it opened the world's eyes up to this possibility, because before that it wasn't a topic of conversation. And now you go to New York City, there are as many yoga studios on every corner as there are pizza places. You know, you go into Southern California, there are more yoga studios than there are drug stores, you know, and he brought the whole concept of yoga and spirituality over here. And, you know, if you look at it, how it's changed the world now ever since, you know, it's had a dramatic effect on, you know, radio shows like your shows. They didn't have radio shows like this 40 years ago. You know, this is all part of the mainstream now. And George was a part of it because he used every bit of his celebrity to bring attention to the fact that we are soul. We're all going to eventually leave this life. So if we're going to leave this life eventually, you might as well, if you're really interested, find out a little about where we're going when this life is over. And so now, because he advanced himself spiritually and he did have the enlightenment, because I experienced it and it was the most powerful spiritual thing I'd ever experienced in my life. But when I do these events that are called David Young Channeling George Harrison, I do these events all over the country. I'm taking a break right now for the summer because I'm working on finishing book two. But when I do these events, there are people in the audience who see George standing right next to me. The people who are channelers and, you know, mediums, channelers, it's like the same thing. But these people can see George standing right next to me. And if that's not incredible enough, I will have people during the event will say, will raise their hand and they'll say, if this event is called David Young Channeling George Harrison, why do I see John Lennon standing on the other side of you? And the reason why that is because I found out in October of 2013, 3 years after all this thing started, I found out that John was George's partner in this whole thing. And it completely made sense. 2 weeks later, I went to see a channeler for the first time. All I said was that George Harrison had been visiting me for 3 years. 5 minutes into this conversation I had with my first channeler, this woman said, John Lennon just popped up. Did you know he was part of this? I had just found out 2 weeks before, and I swear in my life, I did not mention John Lennon's name. I wasn't even thinking about John Lennon because, you know, we were having a session about George. I went to three other channelers. They all said the same thing. And like 5 minutes into the session, do you know that John Lennon is part of this thing? Because he's right here, and he wants me to tell you this. So
we're talking with David Young. We've got to take a break, but we're going to come right back and continuing channeling Harrison. Stay with us.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline next on Empower Radio.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you'll realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be.
They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
How do you wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for Stories That Heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline.
Welcome back to a fascinating show today. My guest is David Young, who has recorded 55 albums, has a million CDs out there, has entertained Paul McCartney, who gave him a standing ovation, and now is working discarnately with George Harrison. We're talking about his book, Channeling Harrison. One of the things that I noticed on the book description is that you recorded 25 songs in 30 days that sound like George was helping download them. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was dating his daughter. That was back in 2010. And like the only thing that would really get through, because she had been through quite a few disappointments and she was emotionally unavailable. And I had never experienced dating a woman that was emotionally unavailable, because I was in a 9-year relationship. And before that, I was in a 7-year relationship, you know. And it seemed like the only thing that would really open her up was when I wrote a song for her. And like the very first song, well, it wasn't the first song I wrote for her, but the first song that George wrote with me was a song called I'm Still Missing You. And so, you know, that was helping my cause of trying to get through to her and so she would trust me, you know, because, you know, when people have been disappointed a lot, it really affects their trust. And so once I started writing these songs for her, I just couldn't stop. And George's energy with the whole thing was so, I guess, relentless would be the best thing. I mean, anytime I would think of a sentence that I wanted to say to this woman, in 2 minutes, that sentence had a melody. In 15 minutes, it was a completed song. It was ridiculous. You know, normally it takes hours and hours to write songs. And so every day I would call up the studio, because I had written another song the night before, and I, you know, go back into the studio, and I mean, it was just a whirlwind. And I was doing stuff in the studio. I had made so many albums, and I'd done like almost everything you could possibly do with music, because I had recorded, you know, at that point it was probably 40 or 42 different albums. And I was doing things in the studio that I didn't know why I was doing these things. They were bizarre techniques that I had never done before. And a couple of years later, I was reading this book on how the Beatles recorded their guitars. And the exact thing that I was doing, which was so unconventional that I was driving the engineers out of their minds, but these unconventional things that I was doing were the exact techniques that the Beatles used to use, specifically George and John Lennon. That's how they recorded their acoustic guitars, in the same way as I was doing this, you know. So the unique thing about it is that as time went on, I started to realize that, you know, this experience is, it's more real than I'm giving it credit for, because, you know, a couple of days after each experience, I would convince myself that it was just a coincidence, you know. And the unique thing about it is that I thought the whole thing was about his stepdaughter. I thought once that, you know, she and I ended the relationship after 2 months, I thought these experiences were over, because I thought it was really all about her. I thought my common sense was telling me, well, he wants her to be happy. And so, you know, he obviously has some kind of connection with me, even though I didn't know why he had a connection with me. And so I couldn't believe it that after she and I broke up, I couldn't believe that he was still appearing to me and he was still helping me. And I was just amazed, because I thought for sure that the thing would be over.
So George is helping you, but how are you helping George? What is it that George didn't get to say or didn't get to say enough of? And has John let you know why he's a part of this?
Well, yeah, those are a lot of good questions. Which one do you want me to answer first?
Let's try, what are you doing for George?
Well, when... Okay, George died when he was 61 years old, and he wasn't finished with all of the spiritual work that he wanted to do while he was here. So he's able to work with me and use me like an extension of himself to continue the work. And that work it's not just to do with music. Honestly, music is just a small part of it. The big part of it is the fact that people, if you go back a couple of thousand years, it was customary and normal for people to talk about being connected with their ancestors, the Native Americans, the Aboriginal people. Being connected to your ancestors was vital to your survival because, you know, if you were getting a message from your father who had passed away, and if his spirit came to you and said, hey, don't go into this part of the forest right now because you're going to be lunch if you go in there. You know what I'm trying to say? It was important to listen to those voices of spirit that were helping us. Sometimes spirit appears to us as this universal spirit, but sometimes our loved ones from the past can give us guidance and give us help for our survival. And for thousands and thousands of years, this was customary and it was accepted. But it's only in the last couple of hundred years that is become taboo. And from what George has told me, God doesn't want that to be taboo anymore. If you love somebody your whole life, like a grandmother, a grandfather, a husband, a best friend, and they happen to end their physical life for whatever reason it ends, and now they're in their spirit form in the inner world, that love that you had, that you shared with them while they were alive, that love never goes away. That's why when you meet a new person who you instantly have a connection with that person, you're thinking, why do I feel so close to this person? Why do I feel connected to a person who I've just met after 5 minutes? That is because you have a connection with that person from the past. And if you have love with somebody from the past, that love never goes away. And so in the last couple of years, it's becoming more accepted for people to talk about this kind of stuff. And because whatever the Beatles did really got the world's attention. I mean, the Beatles changed hairstyles and the world changed hairstyles. They changed clothing styles and the world changed clothing styles. They had a reach into millions and millions of people who had this love and this affinity with the Beatles. And so the difference between this and anybody else who's experiencing a connection with a loved one who's already crossed over to the other side is that because this is connected to George and John, it's going to get a lot more attention from the world, which is really what God wants, because there's no reason to disconnect ourselves from our loved ones just because they're on the other side. And from what I have learned and understood in the last year of this process for myself is that the worst part of the dying process is for our loved ones on earth to think that we have just disappeared, disintegrated into nothing, and we are unreachable, and we're completely gone, because we're not ever completely gone. I mean, there are thousands, millions of people. Every time I do an event, I ask the audience, how many of you people have had some kind of experience with a loved one who's not alive anymore, and you still feel their presence? Half of the audience always raises their hand. That means half of the world is having experiences with their loved ones. And what I've experienced over the last year is that our loved ones are more involved in our physical lives than we have a clue of. Okay.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here, so I totally get that. So the music that you're writing and what you're getting across for George is part of what he wants to do then, open people up to perhaps communicating with their loved ones who have gone on.
Absolutely. When we do these events, after the meditation, I would ask people if they had any experiences that they wanted to share. And at every single event that I've done, and there's been probably 30 events that I've done at this point, there have been between 3 and 5 people who share experiences. Like this one woman, her husband died in 9/11 and hadn't seen, had any connection with him since 9/11, but she felt so comfortable. And during the meditation, when I was playing the flute, it was relaxing, it was uplifting. She felt connected spiritually, and her husband came to her for the first time since 9/11. Every single time we do this, people share stories, and one is more incredible than the other. And I, you know, this is coming to somebody who I didn't believe in this stuff. I didn't believe it was possible. And so I was noticing that in the back of the room, above the heads of the people, I was seeing these light beings, these souls that were over the heads of the people. And I asked George, what are these? Who are these? You know, what is this, you know? And he said that when people register to come to one of our events, I contact their loved ones in heaven. And if they're interested, I bring them to the event so they can reconnect with their loved ones on earth who are still alive, who happen to be coming to one of our events. And that's why these people keep sharing these experiences about reconnecting with their loved ones. And it's so meaningful to them because, you know, I mean, when you love somebody and they're not alive anymore, I think there's two giant parts of it. One is that we miss that person, you know, and the other part is we wonder, well, what's really happening to him? You know what I mean? And for people to experience somebody who they love again, to know they are still alive in their spirit form, and for people who've never had an experience like that, it changes their whole way of thinking about life and life after this life.
Is John also putting his oar in, or is he strictly working upstairs with George?
No,
because John was someone who was so huge about Imagine and the piece Bed In and all of that, that I would think that he would also have something to say.
Well, you have to understand my perspective of this thing. I wasn't a Beatles fan. I had read a book on John's life that did not paint him in a really positive light. You know, of course he was super talented and he wrote the songs that, you know, shaped a generation of people, you know, but I didn't have a connection with John Lennon. And my publisher, when we were working on the book in the middle of 2013, he had published so many books about this kind of experiences. And he said, you know, John Lennon is probably going to join into this thing at some point. And I said, yeah, right. You know what I mean? Because I didn't have a connection with John Lennon. You know what I mean? At least with George, he played the sitar. I knew he was into spirituality a little bit, the little I knew about him, you know. But I knew nothing about John Lennon. And so when this whole thing happened, it took me months of opening my heart to him and allowing him in when he really, all he wanted to do was help me. And his energy is so different than George's energy. When it came through the first time, it was shocking, because George's, you know, when George communicates with me, it's very slow and gentle and very zen-like, you know. And John Lennon, his energy is, I don't want to say aggressive, but he's got a lot of energy, and he's kind of like a boxing coach. Like if you saw Rocky and the boxing coach in the corner who's, you know, telling him, okay, get ready for this next round, you know, it's like a hyper energy. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more intense. And so when that happened the first time, it was really an adjustment for me, because now I'm thinking, oh my God, there's two of them. Now who in the world is going to believe me? That was my biggest fear, was because after 3 years of these experiences with George, there was a whole line of experiences that one connected to the other. And when I do these events, I show people with a PowerPoint of these different things. Like, for example, a year into the experience, even though I never painted, I couldn't draw, I would never think of making a painting, I decided to make a painting. And I worked on this thing for 10 hours. I mean, this was like an absolutely unnormal situation. When I finished painting it, I felt great. I would feel like there was this energy coming out of the painting. And the woman who I was dating at the time, she bought me a book on George's life. And in this book was a picture of George wearing his favorite jacket at the after party for the concert for Bangladesh. It was the exact same four colors and the exact same painting design that I had done 2 weeks earlier. It was three gray triangles surrounded by burgundy, gold, and brown. I had painted his jacket without knowing that that was what his favorite jacket was. And so because I had 3 years of these experiences, when I would share these with friends or, you know, it was believable just because there were 3 years of experiences. And when I had this experience, which is in the chapter called Goodness, my publisher and my agent took out the part with John Lennon because they just thought it would be too much for people, that they would just, it would take people from believing my story at the end of the book. They just thought it would be too much, but it was the truth. It's really what happened. And so book two, which is going to be called My Experiences with Lennon and Harrison, George said John's name should go first, being that John's name was not in the first book. Much of the second book is me not only sharing my experiences that I had with John, but my process of opening my heart to him, because, you know, it took time, you know. I don't know how else I could say it. I never thought I would be experiencing anything like this. You know, I was moving along in my spiritual life, meditating a half hour every day, making the spiritual music and doing my thing. And I mean, I didn't initiate this thing. This was not my idea. This was their idea.
If I can throw just a thought in here, sure. It doesn't surprise me that George came through to someone who wasn't looking for him, but was working on their own spirituality. If you go back to, and you experience it with your music, I've experienced it a bit when I was, you know, writing graphic novels. When people want something and want something and want something from you, there's only so much you can give, and then you kind of close down. For someone to keep wanting and wanting what George gave you, how does George know that their ego is not going to get in the way? How does George know that his message will not be drowned in what they want him to say? You were the perfect vehicle. You didn't know about them, but you were a musician. You'd been working on your spirituality just as George had in India in the late 60s. Perfection. To me, your story is more credible because you haven't been looking for him than if you had.
Well, thanks for saying that. I agree with you 100%. You know, you said it perfectly. You know, it actually adds integrity to the story, the fact that I wasn't a Beatles fan. I mean, it's funny because I knew how to play every Led Zeppelin song on guitar, every Bad Company, AC/DC, Pink Floyd. I was into hard rock in the mid-70s style. And the only Beatles songs I learned to play was, I did an album with some songs from the 70s once, a flute album, you know, a relaxing album. And I learned how to play Imagine for that recording. But before that, I didn't know how to play the song Imagine. I didn't know how the songs went. I mean, if people would have sing-alongs, and sometimes it would actually catch my attention in a way of like, isn't this funny? Everybody knows all these Beatles songs, and I've sold a million records, and I don't even know how to play any of the Beatles songs. I mean, is that ridiculous? Why did I never learn any of these songs, you know? So even before this experience happened in 2010, where it started with George, I had had, when I was recording a song from John Lennon that I put on a CD that I did called Imagine, which was all famous songs from Cat Stevens and, you know, John Lennon, all positive songs, you know, and I was recording Number 9 Dream, I think it was about 1998, and this was back in the days when musicians actually performed together in a recording studio. Now everything is done one musician at a time, and usually one musician plays everything, and so I had James Taylor's drummer playing with me, and Tracy Chapman's keyboard playing with me, and I was in the room, I was playing the guitar, because I would overdub the flute afterwards. And I was recording the song Number 9 Dream, which is one of John's songs that he did after the Beatles had broken up. And I had an out-of-body experience where I felt like I was outside my body. There was something inside my body that was continuing to strum my guitar. But I was able to completely separate myself from my instrument, from my physical body, and look at it from outside of myself. And that was years before any of these experiences ever happened, you know, because I played for Paul McCartney in 1999. That experience was probably in 1998. I have so many albums, it's hard to remember what year each one of them was done. And so that was something that was in the back of my mind that was, I was always wondering, you know, man, what was that? How come I only had that one time? And it was only while I was playing that John Lennon song, you know?
There's a quote from George, and since we're close to wrapping up, I want to get your take on it. George said that writing a song is like going to confession to try to see who you are. So you and George are writing these songs together. If you use that idea, is it trying to see who the two of you are together or trying to see who the world is through your music?
Well, I have to say, sometimes these songs that come through with George and with John, because in my experience so far, like in the last 5 months, we've written 30 songs together, the three of us. And usually John's input is more in the lyrics, and I feel George's input more in the musical side of it, even though sometimes George comes up with lyrics, you know, and John comes up with music sometimes. But sometimes I'm writing these songs, I don't even know what these songs are about. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know why they're coming through. I'm just the hand with a piece of paper and a pen in it, and I'm just writing down what's coming through. But with this experience, it's kind of unique because the fact that we're talking about, you know, George had the Enlightenment. We, from the earthly perspective, it's hard for us to tell, well, what is the difference between Buddha's Enlightenment and Jesus's Enlightenment and George's Enlightenment? I mean, is it all the same thing? Is it different? Are there different levels? I mean, once you have that Enlightenment, does everybody become the same? You know, these are questions that you really, there are no answers for these questions, because the only people who know the answer to these questions are Jesus and Buddha and George and the other, you know, Krishna and the other saints and prophets who have had that experience. Nobody's going to be able to write what those experiences are about in a book until you have that experience yourself. I mean, that's my opinion. And so there are different things that George and John put through me to come out that are coming from an enlightened state of consciousness. And there are things that they are being guided by the Great Spirit to put through me. So this way, these concepts can be further advanced in our society. You know, the main thing about all this stuff is really, it's not the, at this point, it's really not the music. It's really, so this way, there are enough people on Earth who this gets their attention, that there is life after this life. And, you know, to many of your listeners, this may be like, you know, spirituality 101. But there are many people out there in the world who don't know what to think of any of this stuff. And because the Beatles had such a powerful influence in this world, I mean, they have a powerful influence in the next world, because all the baby boomers who have already crossed over into heaven, what kind of music do you think they're listening to in heaven? They're listening to their favorite songs, you know? There's music in heaven just like there's music on earth. I mean, it's a reflection of itself, you know? Our life in heaven is more similar to our life on earth than we really have a clue of.
And that's where I think we have to end it. David, I thank you so much for being here. Listeners, if you want to experience Channeling Harrison, if you want to find the plethora of marvelous, marvelous work that David has done, you want to go to www.davidyoungmusic.com. And we're going to outro today with a sample of David's music. David, thank you. Thank George. Thank John.
Yep.
So delighted to have you on, and I am more than happy to help spread the good news.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Corby.
And for Fire Through Spirit, it's Corby Mitlide. We'll see you next week.